Welcome, great friends, to July 2nd on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I'm your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. And one of the reasons why I do this show is because America has some of the greatest stories in the history of mankind. And besides, I'm a proud patriotic American. So with that in mind, let's begin the show with the Pledge of Allegiance. Everyone stand up. Let's face the flags if we have one and put our right hands over our hearts and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Very nice. So now on to today's program.
President Garfield is assassinated.
Continental Congress drafts the Declaration of Independence. And Third Man Records launches the Icarus.
Are we ready for this? Let's go.
1881. President Garfield is assassinated. Now, we've heard the stories about his long, brutally painful death, which lasted months. And I go into detail on that on the death of President Garfield on my September 13th ep. Charles Guiteau, who was simply trying to save the Republican Party, didn't really assassinate Garfield, the voices in his head told him. He was simply handling a much-needed divinely ordained removal, if you will. The actual brain of Guiteau is currently in a jar at the Mutter Museum in Philly if you want to check it out. But there's really nothing in there that's that exciting about it. In fact, it kind of looks like a jar of artichoke hearts. The question is, what inside that brain triggered Guiteau to kill the president? He had been a social misfit, Guiteau had no friends, a father who was convinced that Charles was possessed by the devil, a wife who left him, he once chased his sister with an axe, careful there, it's not a toy, and couldn't hold a career, whether he was trying to be a preacher or a lawyer. He was a failure in nearly every part of his life. He loved the Republican Party and wanted to help out in any way possible by annoyingly hanging around the party office in the White House, asking everyone for a job, until Secretary of State James Blaine finally told Guiteau to take a hike and never come back. Legend has it, that's what triggered Guiteau into shooting the president. No conspiracies here, nothing to see. The only weird thing about the case is that we can still see the killer's brain if we pay a visit to the museum in Philly. But hang on a second. A presidential assassination without a conspiracy? Not so fast. When inaugurated, President Garfield said a couple interesting things in his speech. One of them was about Mormonism, and it went like this. Quote, "The Mormon Church not only offends the moral sense of manhood by sanctioning polygamy, but prevents the administration of justice through ordinary instrumentalities of law." Unquote. So, was it the Mormon Mafia who planted ideas into Guiteau's head? Like many conspiracies, I highly doubt it. Mormon leaders expressed nothing but deep sorrow in Garfield's death, comparing the president's behavior to the actions of Jesus Christ himself. On a different note, Garfield said something else in his speech that was interesting regarding Black Friday. Black Friday is when banker Jay Gould cornered the gold market, which I cover in detail on my September 24th ep. Quote, "Whoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce. And when you realize that an entire system is very easily controlled, one way or another, by a few powerful men at the top, you will not have to be told how periods of inflation and depression originate." Unquote. Uh-oh, wait a minute. That's not what the banking industry wanted to hear, and that was a direct threat to their business. So, is it possible that a banker whispered something into Guiteau's ear, giving him yet another reason to kill the president? I don't know. You'd have to ask Guiteau's brain on display in a jar full of alcohol and water at a museum in Philly. Look, Guiteau killed him because he was schizophrenic and mentally unstable. Period. End of story. Or is it? Draw your own conclusions. 2016, Third Man Records launches the Icarus craft, which plays Carl Sagan's A Glorious Dawn in the stratosphere. Now, music being played in space was nothing new. Jingle Bells being the most legendary of all, there's also some other cool songs that were played out in outer space. Cheeseburger in Paradise by Jimmy Buffett, The End by the Doors, Across the Universe by the Beatles, To the Moon and Back from Savage Garden, Galileo by the Indigo Girls,
Even Knights of the Round Table by Monty Python. What was unique about A Glorious Dawn was the fact that it was vinyl and it was played on a space-proof turntable. Jack White, perhaps best known for being the frontman for rock band White Stripes, was getting ready to celebrate the anniversary of his independent record label, Third Man Records, and wanted to do something special. So he created a turntable and record that would withstand the harsh conditions of outer space, a project that would be taken on by engineer Kevin Sirico. Sagan's Glorious Dawn was remixed for this occasion to include vocals from Stephen Hawking that would be repeated as the turntable rose inside the balloon for about 80 minutes to its ascension. If you've ever used a record player for anything besides scratching, you can imagine its trip up to space had to be tight, with a sturdy phonocartridge, stylus, and onboard flight computer programs designed to keep the record playing while it was safe to do so. Once the record player was released from the balloon, it went into turbulence mode, where the record continued to spin, but the tone arm was lifted from the record surface to protect the needle and the record. The needle and the record. The needle and the record. Can we just use a CD player? No, we're going to be difficult. Thanks, Jack. And going back to 1776, the Second Continental Congress takes a vote. A piece of paper called the Declaration of Independence, drafted by some dude named Thomas Jefferson between June 11th and June 28th, 1776, established a very powerful statement by the Second Continental Congress against the British Crown. The vote for adopting this declaration was unanimous, with only New York abstaining. According to archives.gov, this declaration, in exalted and unforgettable phrases, Jefferson expressed the convictions in the minds and hearts of the American people. The political philosophy of the declaration was not new. Its ideals of individual liberty had already been expressed by John Locke and the Continental philosophers. What Jefferson did was to summarize this philosophy in self-evident truths and set forth a list of grievances against the king in order to justify before the world that the breaking of ties between the colonies and the mother country. The delegates voted in favor of this on July 2nd, 76, and John Adams wrote that July 2nd would be celebrated as the most memorial era in the history of America. Close! The declaration was adopted, of course, 2 days later on the 4th of July.
And so that is all, my friends, for July 2nd on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I am your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Take a look at the website at joesdailyushistorylesson.com. It's filled with multiple choice quizzes for your entertainment. And it has a comment board. This is where you, my friends, get involved. Let me know what you thought about today's show. What's your take, for instance, on Amelia Earhart? Where did she go? And then, of course, the Declaration of Independence. And as you can imagine, I'll be touching on that a little bit more in the next couple days. But until then, be sure to check out tomorrow's show, the 3rd. We'll welcome Idaho to the Union. Plus, America shoots down an Iranian commercial flight. And we'll finish the story about the Battle of Gettysburg with Pickett's Charge. So until then, you can hit me up on Facebook and Twitter. My Twitter handle is JDUSHL. Thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans. We'll see you then.